Spiritual growth. What are the benefits? And just how do you facilitate that growth? Welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm Jenny Sawyer, and today my guest is Scott Preller. Scott is a Christian Science practitioner and teacher. He also currently serves on the Christian Science Board of Directors and is a member of the Christian Science Board of Trustees. Hey, Scott, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Well, it's the new year, and a lot of people are thinking about growth, transformation, change. I think you hear a lot about personal growth. Mm-hmm. That can look a lot of different ways for a lot of different people. I can speak for myself here as a Christian Scientist. I often think more in terms of spiritual growth. Maybe you do too.
Me too, yeah.
How would we define what spiritual growth is for our listeners?
Well, one of the things that I like to think about is there's this kind of rhythm or cadence in the Bible of what I call already, not yet.
Hmm.
There's one of the passages that I think is very familiar, especially to Christian Scientists, is something that's read at the end of Sunday church services from 1 John, where it says, you know, beloved, now are we the sons of God. So already, right? Mm. Already. And it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him. So kind of built into the fabric of Christianity, this message of your spiritual identity is already, God made you.
Mm.
That's set. That's already. There's also this sense of you have to learn what that is. And that as you're trying to deal with human experience, the only way to really have life on the basis that God intends you to have it is through spiritual growth.
Mm.
It is to be more and more conscious of that already-ness of who you really are as God made you. And that's it's the work of that, the challenge of that, the defeats, the victories, all that goes into that is to me where spiritual growth is, you know, just so key to our progress in demonstrating Christianity.
I love that framework. I'd never thought about that in relation to the Bible before, and that's so helpful that we have a foundation of kind of being there already, which I think, yes, as you're saying, it's biblically based. Christian Science does bring a specifically unique dimension to mm-hmm. that, though. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and I think I found this so helpful. It's one of the things that I think everything I've studied about and learned and gained and valued in terms of this subject of spiritual growth, I have found in really understanding what Christian Science opens up for me about the Bible's message about this. And I think one of the real distinctions is that often spiritual growth, personal growth, is seen in the world as something you're trying to do to improve a human self.
Right.
And that's why we've got all the, you know, New Year's resolutions and things. And Christian Science really does come at this from an entirely different perspective. And that is that you aren't trying to improve a human self as much as you are working to wake up
mm-hmm.
to a spiritual identity that's already established. And that's where you're never trying to improve a mortal as though if you really worked on that mortal enough and improved it and made it better and better, it's finally going to get to be spiritual. You know, that's a skewed sense of things. What it is much more about truly how much are we realizing that what we think of as life, as a material existence that we're going through each day, how much are we accepting that as the valid sense of what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And to what degree do we take seriously what's evident in Christ Jesus' teachings and in the Bible throughout is that there's real substance to your spiritual being, and what you think of as so substantial here maybe isn't so substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is what Christian Science brings to it is a sense that the only way to properly regard that material sense of life is as a dreamlike sense of existence or even a mesmerized, hypnotized sense of existence that would try to keep us from really seeing who we are as the awake children of God. And so for me, it's been so important to realize that I am never trying to improve a mortal self to the point where it's acceptable to God.
Mm.
I am always trying to wake up to see what God has already done.
It's interesting that you use that term mesmerism, because while I think it's a great description of that mortal sense of existence with all of its, you know, trials and character issues and all of that, when you put it like that, it seems like, well, of course we'd want to grow spiritually then. Of course we'd want to slough that off of, you know, like, who would want that? But I think in practice, we can find that spiritual growth can be a lot more challenging, and there might even be resistance to it. Have you experienced that?
Oh, of course. Of course. It's one of the reasons when you first talked to me about doing this podcast, I can't quite remember how the conversation went, but it went something along the lines of, you know, we'd really like to talk about spiritual growth and how, you know, it can be natural and so forth. And I, my response to you at that time was, I don't think it often feels very natural. It often, in fact, I find it is about the second hardest thing there is to do. And the only thing harder is to try to live without spiritual growth. And so that the resistance is something that I think we have to deal with on a daily basis. And it really comes down to, are we willing to take seriously, I mean, really take seriously what Christian Science says about the nature of a material sense of existence?
Mm.
Because to the person asleep, the dream they're involved in seems very valid. And why would I challenge that? To the person that is essentially hypnotized into believing that they're something other than they are, you know, it's like I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And so anything that is challenging that and saying, no, that's as comfortable as that may seem, that's not who you really are. You've got to wake up. And that impulse to realize, no, there is something more. There is something that is speaking to me within that is saying that even if I like that, that's not really who I am.
Yeah.
That you know, Christian Science helps us see that really is the voice of the Christ, that this true idea of God. I mean, Mrs. Eddy at one point talks about Christ as the real man and his relation to God. And that sense of being that is knowing who we really are in our relation to God, and to each day work at seeing more of that, whether life is going really well or going really poorly, but to not let the flood, the drone of mortal sense of existence overtake that voice of Christ. That is the resistance that we have to overcome each and every day. I mean, it's just a daily demand.
How do you think we recognize that voice amidst what you call the drone, which is a great description?
I think this comes to me. I mean, I can only speak from my experience about how I recognize it. To me, it comes back to that already, not yet. I feel like in those times when it has seemed the absolute hardest to feel that closeness to God, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy says that spiritual sense is that conscious, constant capacity to understand God. There's something that was there before all the noise, before all the drone, that cannot be extinguished.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that it was true in the Bible times with Jesus. It was true when Mary Baker Eddy was writing Science and Health. It's all built on this absolute certainty that bedrock is that no matter how much junk has been piled on, there is something within each of us that knows that we are the children of God.
Yeah.
And so there's something that won't let us fully not hear it.
Yeah.
If our desire is to know God, then no matter what comes, it can't be drowned out. The fact of the matter is, this is what Christian Science teaches, and this is what I think experience shows, is that there is something so bedrock about our relation to God, about our spiritual identity as defined by Christ speaking to us, that no amount of noise from the world, no amount of you know, really vivid depictions or even physical challenges can keep us from really feeling if we'll listen to it.
Yeah.
And that's what the work of spiritual growth is about.
Can you think of a time when that happened for you?
Oh, yeah. I think just one more point about that. I think that one of the things that is so core to this whole topic is that the nature of human experience is that when we experience stuff, and maybe it's difficult, challenging stuff, physical challenges and whatnot, and we sometimes go down this path of thinking, well, okay, if I'm feeling this way, it must say something about my relation to God. I'm doing something wrong.
Right.
What am I not seeing? What am I not doing?
Right.
And that can be a pretty pervasive pull. One of the things that is so inherent in what the Bible's message is that whereas people for so long believed that how you were doing said something about your relationship to God, the message of Christianity is your relationship to God gives you information about how you should think about whatever else is going on in your life. It gives you your right sense of what's going on by which you challenge everything else. So that's just a whole different orientation of things.
Right.
And so a few months ago, I took some time, which I do each year, to take a couple weeks and really explore some of science and health. And this was a time of real deep study and spiritual growth for me. And it was very interesting. Afterwards, I finished the 2 weeks and felt very, you know, people talk about being on a kind of a mountaintop, and I felt that way. I felt very spiritually alive.
Mm-hmm.
And a few nights later, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I felt pretty crummy. I mean, I just felt ill. And I thought, okay, what do I do now? And I thought, you know, I'll try to go back to sleep for a while. And it didn't work. And I finally, after kind of just tossing and turning for a while, I said, now, wait a minute. You just spent 2 weeks really affirming that you want to think and act from this basis of what you know to be true about the nature of God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite, and of my own identity as being a reflection of that infinite good God. So get up and just work from that basis, like literally just go back to what you were working on those 2 weeks and just let your thought be there. There are many places in science and health where Mrs. Eddy talks about in science this. And she's talking about mentally looking at what's going on from the standpoint of science, of divine science, Christian science, which is the basis of the allness of God and all of God's creation being the reflection of God, which is so infinite that it doesn't allow for something else. It doesn't allow for validity or authority to reside in things that are the antithesis of God. And so I got up and I just worked that way. And it was just this very sweet moment of realizing after about 5 minutes of working this way that everything I was feeling was completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one lesson of just, you know, obedience. And interestingly, there was a sort of a second half to this. About 2 nights later, I woke up feeling with totally different symptoms, feeling lousy again. And I got up and I thought, okay, that was really neat the way that worked the other night. So I started working that way. I just felt nothing but mental fog, and I still was feeling lousy. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, the other thing is I have derived so much help in waking up in moments when I felt I was feeling spiritually asleep by just reading Science and Health. And so I thought, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So I just sat down and I just started reading it. And I just started letting what it was telling me about what was going on be where I kept my thought rather than physically what I was feeling. And it was in like a different version of the experience, but it was again an example to me where just after several minutes of just reading, I suddenly realized I wasn't even thinking about the problem anymore and I felt fine.
Mm.
And it was just an example to me where something that in both those instances, you know, what I felt physically seemed very tangible and real, but what I let my heart and my thought go to in terms of the truth of what Christ Jesus was teaching and which Christian Science showed me a scientific application of, it was like more concrete. It had more authority. It had more validity.
Mm.
And so, you know, we all have victories and defeats, and I can't say, it always works out just that simply. But I can say that everything about my experience in Christian Science has shown me that my victories and even the challenging things I've had to work through have made me feel more validity in the reality of spirit than in the material dream picture that, you know, is so pervasive so much of the time.
Mm. I love those experiences because I think that they answer an underlying question that I want to get to, which is, it's really the how of spiritual growth. And a piece of what I hear you talking about with what you shared is, I think there's a real childlikeness to it. And that, it does make a lot of sense when you think about it, because children love to grow. I mean, they love to learn. This is what I love about teaching Sunday school, especially to young kids. They just look at you with these big eyes and they just accept the truth. It's why kids get healed so easily. They don't have any problem leaving behind old ways of thinking. They may not even have old ways of thinking. So other than childlikeness, what else do you think really helps facilitate spiritual growth?
A willingness to work.
Mm.
A willingness to let your thought be supported by spiritual disciplines. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we look back at Jesus' life, some things are pretty clear. He was a regular churchgoer.
Mm.
It talks about as his custom was, he went into the temple, into the synagogue. It was clear he took regular time to truly commune with God, to pray with God. And I think one of the things that I truly love about Christian Science is that Mary Baker Eddy has provided a very structured set of ways of supporting spiritual growth. In, first of all, the Christian Science textbook that helps us have a relationship with the Bible that is truly coming at the Bible with a sense of, I'm coming at this as a scientist. I'm going to explore it. Mm. I'm going to experiment. I'm going to prove it. I'm going to test it. And I'm going to really work from this basis of this underlying sense of God's allness and infinite power. So that study of the textbook, a willingness to do that regularly. You know, she provided a regular Bible lesson for people to study that helps that be a regular cadence. There's the Christian Science periodicals that show that not just was this true then, but it's being proven all the time. It's a current activity.
Mm.
I think the experience of church, involvement in church is a very real part of that discipline. And I think that just that willingness to day in, day out, you know, say, God, I want to feel you more. I want to know you more. You come at this with a conviction that, you know, you talked about children and in a little different sense, you know, a child may want a lot of stuff that they're sure they need, right? But often a parent, because of their love for that child, may know more what that child needs than even the child thinks it's so determined to have.
Yeah.
You know, when we start to realize that our true parent is infinite divine love, God, we realize that love is always leading us to a greater spiritual sense of substance. We're learning the spiritual lessons we need mm-hmm. and growing in the spiritual ways we need to grow to meet whatever the need is. And I find that that's really been a very real part of my own spiritual growth is that, you know, there have been times when I really knew exactly what I wanted or how, when I wanted this healed or when I want, you know, and to learn that God knows what I need more than I know what I think I want. And
yeah.
that just that persistence of partaking of those elements that support spiritual growth that have been provided to us, I think is a very real part of that. And then the work part of it really comes in never letting them become routine,
mm.
never letting them become kind of, well, okay, I read my Bible today, so God owes me a good day.
right.
You know, because that's basically saying, I want to use my spiritual growth to endorse or improve my mortal existence. And that is not spiritual growth, but rather to say, I don't want this day to be at the end of the day, okay, I had a better mortal day. I want this day to be, this day brought lessons that made me more alive to the reality of spirit. And I'm seeing through some of the stuff that was trying to say it was so real in a new way. The other thing I would add to that is Jesus said, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. If you ever lose the hunger, you're not going to keep growing. And mm-hmm. so that hunger I love an exchange that Mary Baker Eddy had with a Unitarian minister that she was on very good terms with, a man named Frank Phelan. In a letter exchange, he was talking about something that he'd appreciated and something she'd done. And she wrote back, and it was on the subject of Christian growth. And she wrote back, and this letter, I think, is very telling because it helps us, I think, both work more, but also be patient as we're working, but never become complacent with that patience. So she wrote, "I am never satisfied with my Christian growth. I can see increase of knowledge yearly, but do not see the spiritual progress that I need more than all else. But the dear God is merciful, and life is eternal wherein to gain the goal."
Well, I've never heard that before.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. I think it points back to your earlier point, which I want to now expand on a little bit for listeners, about spiritual growth is the second hardest thing, and the hardest is not growing. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. You know, you asked me earlier in this, how do you hear that voice of truth of the Christ when there's a lot of noise from the drone of material sense? The problem is trying to live without spiritual sense, when you've really allowed the weight of mortal existence to so eclipse the light that's coming from truth that you really are only seeing material sense as the whole of your existence, that's a pretty dark place. I mean, even if on the surface at times it looks pretty attractive, you know, I mean, I don't know what happens. You win some prize or whatever it is. Something goes really well, or you know, you're feeling particularly healthy for a period. Whatever measures life and calls it good from a material basis is always going to be temporary, is the point. The nature of matter as the substance of being is that it's not reliable. It decays, it falls apart, you know, it's not lasting. And so to try to find something that feeds that deep hunger for spirit that I think is in all of us within just a material outlook on life, as I say, it can be very dispiriting. It can feel like you're pedaling with all your might and you're not making progress, or maybe even worse, you can start thinking you're doing really great, you know, and I'm pedaling, I'm getting ahead of other people and stuff. And that's even worse, because you're like the prodigal son who goes off and spends all his living on, you know, riotous living, and has forgotten his whole relationship with his father.
Yeah. Mrs. Eddy has this very arresting statement, which I'm sure you're familiar with, where she talks about self-imposed suffering. And I think as you're talking, I was thinking about that, because during periods of my life that have either come about because of, you know, difficult circumstances and then required spiritual growth, or just been periods of spiritual growth that have been really challenging, one of the things that's become really evident to me, and I think this points to this point of it's harder not to grow, is the suffering we deal with, as hard as it is to admit, is self-imposed. In a way, it's this darkened sense of what's real that for whatever reason we seem to have accepted as our own way of thinking about the world, about ourselves. And so, I mean, I can say from my own perspective that during those really rocky moments, I do take comfort in the fact that if suffering is self-imposed, we can also divest ourselves of it. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of coming out of these moments, is, okay, as hard as they are to maybe see some of these things, ways we've been thinking about ourselves or character traits, like, oh, I wish I'd never seen that. There's just this beauty and glory of recognizing, to go back to your already point, oh, but wait, that's not really who I am. I am being awoken from that. And with that comes the divestment of that suffering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 2 points I want to make about that. Back to what you were saying about suffering being self-imposed. I think it may be helpful to put a little context in that,
sure,
too, because it isn't, nobody would choose that, right?
No.
The self-imposed part of that comes from the fact that mortal consciousness is a state of self-deception. If you're thinking you're immortal, you are, in effect, already hypnotized, in a sense. And so when we're working on healing, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, so I get that this is a self-imposed thing because it's part of mortal consciousness. But one of the really crucial hinges I find in my own healing practice is that is not the same thing as then accepting the guilt for it.
Mm.
I mean, sometimes it can be tempting to think, oh, so this is, since it's self-imposed in that sense, I'm at fault for this, and I'm just a terrible person. I'm not worthy of healing. And you can go down that rabbit hole pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think Christian Science has taught me that I'm enormously grateful for is that when that mortal consciousness is trying to pile on all the guilt and stuff and give all the reasons for why you're suffering, well, it came up with all those reasons. You didn't wake up in the morning and said, I really want to suffer today. That mortal sense came up with those reasons. And so make sure you give it all the credit. You know, if that mortal sense wants to say, you know, I'm guilty of this and that, that's the mortal sense. But it hasn't touched that alreadyness that we were talking about of my identity as a child of God.
Yeah.
And it is that spiritual innocence that once we wake up enough to start thinking and spiritually treating ourselves from that basis of the alreadyness, we realize that all that self-imposed stuff has never touched this intactness of God's creation.
Mm.
And that's what makes healing possible. Because all that time spent, you know, feeling badly or guilty or I'm not adequate enough, it's like spinning your wheels in the mud, you know. And so I think that's important to say, because one of the things about a topic like this is that I think is very challenging. Is we're all working at this, right? We're all needing spirit. There's not a person on this planet that doesn't need to grow spiritually. But where we are at a specific moment can be very different, right? I mean, for some people, they may be at a place where the thing they most need to hear is that tender voice of love saying, hang in there, keep working, don't give up. It's the darkest hour does precede the dawn. Other people may be in a place where they need to say, stop just doing the same thing over and thinking that's going to get different results. Wake up to something, see something new.
Right.
You know, get off the couch and get in the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we have to trust the message of God, divine love, to speak to what our need is. But if that hunger to grow is there to learn what we need to learn, you know, that's the good news, is we will be fed. That's part of Jesus' message, right, is that when you ask, he tells his followers, if, you know, if, which of you, you know, when a child asks their father for bread, does he give him a stone? God will give us what we need. And that's the good news in all this, is that no matter what we're going through, God will, if our hunger is genuinely to know God, it's not a linear thing. It's not a straight line. We may stumble, fall on our face a few times. We may think we're doing great and then only to stumble some more. But the basic thing is we will be waking up to the reality of God. So one of the things about spiritual growth that I found about spiritual growth is that often for me, when I look back, some of my most significant periods of spiritual growth have been precisely times of greatest or prolonged challenges.
Yeah.
And I had an experience about 3 years ago that it was just such a spiritually growing experience for me. It came without a cause, but I suddenly found it very difficult to lift my arm without great pain in my shoulder. We do a lot of bike riding and stuff in the summers around here and stuff, and I always enjoyed that. And suddenly I found I couldn't do it and enjoy it. And I tried to pray about it. You know, it's one of those things where, like, there's no reason for this. I kept praying. I wasn't discouraged, but I was like, you know, what am I not seeing here? I was feeling like that. And then after probably, gosh, about 3 or 4 months, what happened was everything got worse. And that was that I suddenly developed, you know, I've been praying about this all along, a very debilitating pain in my back. And I would be at work and I'd be sitting in meetings and I'd be kind of just gritting my way through it. And so I was really praying and praying and praying, but it just didn't seem like anything was really moving. So as you can imagine, my only answer to this was just to try to deepen, it's like sort of forced spiritual growth, if you will, deepen my study, deepen my prayer, open up my heart to say, God, what do you need me to see here? And interestingly, I was studying a portion of Science and Health by Mary Baker Eddy, where she is asking a question in a chapter called Recapitulation. And the question is, do the five corporeal senses constitute man? And one of the things that I was wrestling with was how much of what I'm experiencing now is just the five physical senses telling me this is who I am, and what is it I need to learn about what really constitutes being? And the long and short of it is, I was studying this passage for, it's the longest answer and question in that chapter, and there were portions of it that frankly had always just befuddled me. Mm. And I'm, to this day, I'm not saying that what came to me about this is what anybody else should think, but it's just what became meaningful to me.
Yeah.
But one of the things that she really goes into in great depth in that answer to that question is, Mrs. Eddy talks about how the material sense of things really is belief. I mean, when you read that answer, it's just incredible how many times she uses the word belief, belief, belief. Mm. And so I had to ask myself, how much am I really taking seriously the idea that the whole material sense of things is belief? It's not the substance of what my life really is.
Mm.
And she kind of helped me see, as vivid and real and tangible as this material sense of life seems to be, how can you say it's not really the substance of being and that spiritual life is? And she uses a description that she says basically the only way to make sense out of material existence is through two ways. One is to think of it as sleep, and one is as mesmerism. I mean, she says sleep and mesmerism explain the mythical nature of material sense. And as I was thinking about that, I realized that, okay, so when you are asleep, objectively, your body's still there in the bed, right? But in your dream, you may be going through all kinds of stuff, right? When you go to bed tonight, you can't control what you're going to dream about.
Right.
You know, you're going to, you know, that's part of the whole claim of it, right? So anyway, then the thing that really became the wrestling point for me was this one sentence where she, just this is the sentence that just so puzzled me for so many years, where she said, material man is made up of involuntary and voluntary error, of a negative right and a positive wrong, the latter calling itself right. I can't tell you how long that just seemed like gobbledygook to me. But the more I thought about it and wanted to understand it better, the more I stopped thinking so much about the pain I was in on a daily basis, because I really wanted to understand this. And in this experience, I came to realize that my whole mortal sense of existence, if it was based on a material sense of being, then just like the dream, where in a dream, you don't have conscious control over what you're thinking or doing or where you're going, but you are more free from the confines of matter. So you can fly in a dream, do something like that. So you've got this one sense of consciousness where in a dream where you've got the negative part of it that you don't control what you're thinking or where you're going or the experience you're having, but you have this right part of it where you're not as confined by matter, so that's a negative right. But the other part of material sense of man is this, what she describes as a positive wrong, the latter calling itself right. Well, this positive wrong I came to see is, for me, was when I think I'm awake. You know, when I'm not sleeping, when I'm awake, well, it's positive because I get to decide what I think. I'm more in control of that. That's positive. But the wrong is that I think I'm doing all this stuff in a material construct. That's still a limited sense of thinking, right? But it's because of that very fact that it is a mortal sense thinking and is believing that you live in matter. It's wrong.
Mm.
So it's positive in that it's expressing consciousness, but it's wrong in that it's a consciousness that believes that its substance is based in matter. But yet we're so familiar with that, that we kind of fall guilty to the latter, what she says is the latter calling itself right. When we're awake, we're sure we've got it right.
Yeah.
And then she goes on later to talk about, when we are awake, we dream of the pains and pleasures of matter. Who will say, even though he does not understand Christian Science, that this dream, rather than the dreamer, may not be mortal man? So she really makes it clear that to whatever degree we're thinking of a material sense of man as our real life, we don't have it yet. We're either in a dreamlike state or mesmerized. But to really get what life really is, you've got to understand that it's what God is expressing. It's what God is doing in us. And that's why on the next page, she says just as strongly and clearly as she could possibly state, being is holiness, harmony, immortality. That's the substance of being. And for me, that just became what I was determined to anchor my consciousness in all the time, is just keep holding to the fact that whatever was going on in the physical body, the fact was, the real wide awakeness was that my being was an expression of holiness, harmony, and immortality, because that's what God was maintaining in me.
Mm.
How willing was I to do that? You know, or how much was I trying to go through my little mortal life and try to apply Christian Science like frosting on a cake to make it go better, and thinking that that was somehow enough?
Mm.
And so this really forced me to grapple with what Mrs. Eddy talks about again and again as the problem of being.
Mm.
You know, what is it at its core? The material sense, no matter how you spin it, no matter how you do it, it's going to come out with this contradiction where you don't really have a reliable sense of good.
Mm.
And so that started to really make sense to me as how much I needed to live my life with living above. Mrs. Ace talks about living above corporeal sense and correcting it. I needed to see that whatever the material senses were saying to me, whether good or bad, was this mix and was wrong. It was an invalid testimony, if you will.
Yeah.
I just have to be conscious all the time that even when the body was claiming pain, that being, my real being, was holiness, harmony, immortality.
Mm.
And I made a commitment to dwell there.
Mm.
To just live there. And, you know, it was so interesting that it was one of those experiences where I couldn't tell you exactly when the healing happened.
Mm.
What I can tell you is that sense of life that knows that real life is holiness, harmony, immortality became much more concrete to me than it had ever been.
Wow.
And so now every time in the summer when we go for bike rides or do something outside, you know, I've often thought of with gratitude of that experience, because it just reminds me, thank you, God. That's when you really showed me more of what being is.
Mm.
And I'm sure that's a far too convoluted testimony to share. But
on the contrary, Scott, I found it immensely helpful. And thank you for walking us through your wrestling and your thought process, because I think these are the moments in spiritual growth when it can feel like I just want to throw in the towel. You know, I mean, we've all had moments where, as you showed in your own experience, it feels like we've prayed every way we know how. And yet, we always have the tools to keep going. I love that. And I think it's so cool what God showed you. And that, to me, is, I mean, far more than any accomplishment we could have in our lives. You know, having the curtains pulled back a little further, to me, just seems like the greatest gift we could be given. So I could talk about this with you for hours. We probably should wrap. Want to give you the opportunity if there's anything else you want to leave our listeners with.
I think the one thought that may be worth ending on is a message that Jesus gave in Matthew, where he reminds us that it says, no man putteth a piece of new cloth into an old garment. For that which is put into it filleth up the garment, and the rent is made worse. And then he goes on to talk about you don't put new wine in old bottles. But he's really reminding us that this message that he's bringing of the kingdom of heaven being present, and he was delivering it to people who were dealing with some very hard things. They were, you know, their sense of being confined by material sense wasn't any less than ours, for
right,
sure.
Right.
But he was telling them don't try to take the old, the material sense of existence, and think that your spiritual growth is about just trying to improve that.
Mm.
You gotta go with the new and be new, let it be new. And in that message, I think, is something for us to kind of anchor our commitment to spiritual growth in, is that, yes, we have very maybe disciplined approaches to trying to improve our spiritual sense, but we never want to let go of that sense of newness that really helps us see beyond the material sense of things to see this is a different world, this is a different universe, and all the rules are different because of it. And so when you get those moments that help us see, I don't have to live by the old rules anymore.
Mm.
You know, even if you have other times where you still feel you're struggling with them, those moments where you really have learned, nope, I get to live by God's law, not by the stuff that seems to pervade so much of human existence. It really does not only help you be more ready for the day, so to speak, but it also just adds so much more light and joy to existence. You see, there's a reason for being, and that's a pretty joyous thing.
Yeah. Scott, I've been really touched by everything that you've shared. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with Scott Preller. He's a Christian Science practitioner and teacher and current member of the Christian Science Board of Directors from Boston, Massachusetts. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer. The podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Ethel Baker. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.